Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG Pod Overflow, the Cinephobe Cold Opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
You said the OG Pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG Pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG Pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP, that's 1-800-639-8783, or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY, or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Welcome to another expedition of the Woke Bros. I'm Michael Jamal Brooks, joined as always by my compatriot and great friend, Big Waz. Waz, how you doing?
I'm good, brother. Good to be back. What's up to you and Rob, obviously, man?
Rob Lopez, Junior Evil Genius, steering the ship here, making sure that we stay on our P's and Q's, Waz. You can, of course, if you haven't yet, listening to this, you should absolutely click the subscribe button to the Bomb feed, where you can, the Black Opinions Matter feed, where you can get Black Opinions Matter Monday, as well as, of course, the Woke Bros usually on Thursday, but we give ourselves a little bit of flex. But that's 2 shows a week that the people are really, really appreciating across the board. Click subscribe, give us a rating, spread the word, say that Woke Bros is your favorite, incidentally, if you're coming from this show, shit. You can, of course, find me, The Michael Brooks Show, get the whole global political educational experience at patreon.com/TMBS. Very proud of what we're doing. You can also really get and now at this point, very extensive flavor of the show on YouTube. Pretty aggressive with the clips now that we're monetized. Michael Brooks Show on YouTube. And of course, you could also just check it out and subscribe on iTunes. Waz, tell me all of the incredible ways that people can connect to the whole athletic Count the Dings universe.
Yeah, man. As everybody knows, by now, I would hope that most people who are part of the Count the Dings community know that we got partially absorbed by The Athletic. All of our NBA properties are now properties of The Athletic. The same show, same attitude, same, you know, type of content that you come to expect from us. Exact same stuff happening behind The Athletic's paywall. You can get 40% off your first year, which comes out to $2.99 a month. You know, less, almost half a cup of Starbucks, a grande at Starbucks, dude. Like, I think that's at, what, like five? No, it's actually $4.75. But you know what I mean, man.
Well, who is still going to Starbucks, Waz? Like, I mean, your point, but Starbucks?
Well, see, that's the thing. You live in Brooklyn. It's the coffee shop mecca. I'm in Encino, out in the burbs, in the valley. Mm-hmm. It's a bit different.
Fair enough. Well, I'm common sense solutions with Howard Schultz for me. That's still pretty whack.
Exactly. But yeah, Count the Dings. Excuse me. It's theathletic.com/. Is it Dings 40, Rob? I always forget the promo code, honestly. Rob, are you there? Okay.
Rob.
Okay, he might have stepped away. But anyway,
yeah, emphasis on Junior Evil Genius.
Jeez. Yeah. Just count theathletics.com, theathletic.com/Dings40. Get 40% off, $3 a month for the first year. You know, not just our content. If you really follow specifically the NBA, as Zach Harper likes to say, it's hard to follow the NBA if you're not a subscriber to The Athletic at this point. Like, they've got some of the best and brightest in the game. And I don't just say that because I'm a team member, because I was already subscribed before we became part of the operation. So make sure you subscribe to theathletic.com. The bomb feed, count, pack your knives. The Friday mailbag, those feeds are going to remain as is. They're going to stay as awesome as they've always been. Make sure you subscribe, rate to those things. And last but not least, if you're in the greater Chicago area, we encourage people to come out to Lincoln Hall on May 18th. Count the Dings live. Myself, Black Trey, Amin El Hassan, Zach Harper, Tom Haberstroh, Ethan Strauss, Jade Hoy, Nitsan Bluvstein, Eden Liu, the whole crew, Anthony Mays, everybody's going to be in the building. We got a couple of special guests lined up. You don't want to miss that. As the date draws nearer, tickets are going faster and faster, so you don't want to get left out in the cold, so to speak. Although it will be springtime in Chicago, so it won't be too
late. That's the right time to do that in Chicago. And of course, we should also just add that this is really next Saturday. And this is going to be dropping on a Saturday. So a week from the day you're listening to this is the TMBS live show in Los Angeles at the Bootleg Theater with, of course, my woke bro, Big Waz is there, the great Anna Kasparian from the Young Turks, Nando Vila from Fusion News. Also, he, in fact, covered a World Cup and writes on soccer for The Athletic. That's another connection right there. This show is absolutely something you're not going to want to miss. And I will, you know, they're definitely that pace is accelerating like crazy. You can get VIP tickets, come and hang out with us. A bunch of people have already done that, and or general admissions tickets. And we'll see you there April 20th. TMBS hits LA with Big Waz, Anna Kasparian, and Nando Vila. Amazing people, amazing lineup. See you there. And of course, all the rest of the things that you can do in that download you just got of information. So, we're going to hit some, political topics today. First, we're going to start by talking about what's happening in the Sudan, where waves of protests that have been going on now for about 4 or 5 months have resulted in the ouster of President Omar al-Bashir. And Omar al-Bashir has ran Sudan for 30 years. He came to power in 1989 as a coalition. He's a military guy. He also had a political partnership with right-leaning, very socially conservative Muslim parties in Sudan. And he's been kind of internationally known for being wanted by the International Criminal Court because of war crimes he's accused of in the Darfur region, but also multiple other civil war situations, including like the, before the breakoff of South Sudan. I just think the real big takeaways, at least for me, from this story, and obviously it's a very complicated place and it's very inspiring and incredible anytime you see people put their bodies on the line to make change of any kind. And I will just plug, 3 months ago, Bill Fletcher Jr. and I talked about this. I looked that clip up on YouTube. He's one of the most savvy, worldly, brilliant guys in politics imaginable. And we went deep on it. He's the former president of the Trans-Africa Forum. But I think what's really interesting about this, just working backwards, and I'm going to throw to you quick wise by just like setting the table. The army is who's arrested him and has officially taken power now. And what's interesting is that people are still on the street because they're not accepting, at least a significant portion of them are not accepting that. So remember, like in Egypt in 2011, there was that part of that huge uprising that was occurring across the Middle East against all of these old regimes. And Egypt being, you know, this major, you know, an epicenter of that region, of the whole MENA region, what ended up basically happening, and there was a period where you had a Muslim Brotherhood government that won an election that was in power, but essentially you didn't actually have a revolution. You know, you had a military that removed a dictator that sort of let some politics play out, and then at the end of the day, they ran the country. But now, of course, under General Sisi, arguably things are even far worse and more brutal than under Mubarak. So the Sudanese people are definitely demanding that this not follow a sort of similar cycle. They want really deep change. I think the other thing that's really important about this is that a lot of what they were demonstrating over and coming across religious lines to do was a huge thing, because Omar al-Bashir, like all right-wing leaders, was a very divide and conquer guy. But a lot of this was about labor issues and the price of bread, literally. So a lot of economic and austerity concerns that actually reflect the rest of the world, which brings me to my third point, which is that, of course, covering war crimes, Darfur and things like that are really important. But it is really clear, and Nasreen Malik, who's a really good writer in The Guardian, made this point that, you know, several years ago, like in 2007 and 6 and 8, like George Clooney and a bunch of Democrats and Hollywood types, it was very trendy to talk about the crimes of Bashir and Darfur. In the last couple of years, not only not so much of that, but you know, a lot of the same kind of people that hyped those international institutions were not paying attention to the Sudanese people themselves actually reclaiming their political fate. So there's a lot of stories here about, you know, Sudan in and of itself, but lessons about labor, about austerity, and also potentially another kind of media and culture failure with how we understand Africa culturally and politically.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of people don't know this, but that part of the world, that region of the world has been, you know, there's been all kinds of violence and wars and, you know, proxy wars over resources and all the classic African story, right? And these people have overthrown two governments in the last 48 hours because this military dude that came in, they don't want him either because he's been complicit in all of the crazy shit that's been happening for decades over there in that part of the world. Obviously, it's always encouraging when you see an uprising take place from the actual people, the rank and file members of that society, right? Like, it's not a bunch of rich people. It's not the privileged class. It's the normal people of that society standing up. Like you mentioned, I remember Darfur was like, you would hear that word every other day. Yep. Right. Around that time that you were mentioning, it was celebrities mentioning it. I remember if you'd go to a church, anytime you go to church, like at the end of mass at every Catholic church, they always do a list of special places or things or happenings that they're praying for. And Darfur was like on that list for years, you know, like every Sunday they'd be sending prayers up for Darfur. You know, these type of things usually take a very long time to resolve themselves. And every time there is a coup, there's always a power vacuum and there's always some thirst bucket ready to step in and fill it, right? Like, oh, I'll gladly become the leader of this nation. No matter what the people actually want, right? There's always somebody who sees, like, an opportunity for a power grab. And it usually is the military dudes because they have the guns. Yep. You know, so we're going to see how this plays out. I happen to be really close to a few people who are from Sudan, right? Like, I just came from Boss's house earlier. He's from there. He's got family members that are still living there. My man Amin Al Hassan, obviously a member of Count the Dings.
We should get Amin on sometime and talk about
that. Absolutely. Yeah. If we had more time, we could have scheduled that. Yeah. But these are people who are very in tune with what's happening there. They're in Sudan either every year or every other year. So these are people that aren't distant. And so this type of stuff hits home all the time. And if you guys remember, I feel like Sudan was even put on the block list by President Trump at one point. So, yeah, man, this stuff hits close to home. And
you know, on the flip, though, what's also just another thing to put in about this is that, I think it was on the Muslim ban list. But also, maybe we should double check it, but I'm 99% sure it is. Maybe if Rob is there, he could double check it. But I think, but at the other hand, one of the ways in the last couple of years that al-Bashir had sort of been slightly less alienated from places like Europe was that he was actually very vicious and very accommodating in blocking migrants from getting into Europe, as an example. So, you know, the policies and the kind of re-entrenchment of xenophobia, that's obviously very extreme in the United States, but it's also happening in Europe as well. You know, it's kind of aided and abetted by this dude. And it's another example, I think, of how, just of the sort of like ways that we talk about a place like Sudan as if it's like, you know, I mean, all of the stuff we already know, like it's far out, like it isn't comparable to problems that are facing the rest of the world, like it isn't connected to the problems of the rest of the world. It's also an interesting, you know, I think questions about even like the ICC are interesting, you know, maybe for another time too. Not, you know, I don't think anybody would deny that Omar al-Bashir is a war criminal by any useful definition of that word, and almost certainly should be in jail. But it's also, you know, I guess you had some people in Bosnia facing charges, but in general, like the international justice totally blown off by the United States and then really focused on Africa, which isn't to say there's plenty of war crimes in Africa, but there's plenty of war crimes. There's plenty of crimes generally. I mean, certainly in other parts of the world. And in fact, if you include things like Iraq, you know, that would implicate George Bush, Tony Blair, and I would include those things. So there's a lot of stuff that flows out of this conversation. And, you know, we got to really send our attention at least because, you know, this definitely isn't over. You know, like the next phase of the conflict could be just starting right now.
Right. And like you just said, part of being, you know, a progressive, or I wouldn't even say liberal, but somebody who cares about normal, working, everyday people, it's a global issue, right? Like these populist uprisings are happening more and more because everywhere the wealth inequality, the just straight up terrible conditions, that it's got people up in arms, and that's what it's gonna take. People actually straight up hitting the streets and getting these people the fuck up out of here. A lot of people are getting fed up more and more by the day, and we're seeing it all over the globe. So, you know, obviously we send our best regards to the people out in Sudan. We hope everybody can be as safe as possible.
Wise, What are we hitting next?
Man, you know, I had a conversation recently with a couple of people with varying, I want to say, levels of interest in politics generally, right? Like, you know, from somebody who's as tapped in as say you or I, to somebody who just has a sort of passing interest in it, right? So the spectrum as far as politically, it went all over the place as far as this conversation is concerned. And the topic of reparation, actually, you know what came up? AOC came up. And my homie was like, yo, I love what she's doing. I love what she's pushing. I love everything that she's about right now. And somebody else said, I didn't like her answer on reparations and just dismissed her, right? And I like, it's interesting to me that reparations has become sort of this, I don't want to say it's a litmus test, but people are really, and again, the conversation is something that should be had, right? The idea that somebody has a blind spot on reparations at this juncture, me personally, I don't think that it's absolutely not a deal breaker for me, because me being, you know, slightly cynical about this shit and understanding how politics work, I just think it's fascinating that in this moment that we're even putting reparations on the table as far as like, all right, how serious a progressive are you? You know, we're gonna take your temperature as a progressive on this issue, right? Like, and make it something that can be basically like a test. You know, like, what do you score on your reparation score? It's interesting to me that we're in this moment. I just, you know, for me, practically and politically, especially when you talk about the Democratic coalition, which, by the way, full disclosure, like, even though I'm in America, I'm considered black, I would not be getting reparations, right? Like, I need to go get my reparations from France because I'm right. Descended from people from Haiti, right? Like, they were brought over by the French. Somebody like me wouldn't even be getting reparations. It's literally the black American population. I just think as a practical matter, and not even to, like, sound like this incrementalist or pragmatist, I'm just like, this issue is radioactive. And it's not radioactive just amongst, you know, the people, quote unquote, across the aisle, the GOP base. Like, we already know it's a non-starter there. It's radioactive within the Democratic coalition. Okay, there are people who are tried and true Democrats who don't feel that way about this issue. Right? It's an issue that straight up would only benefit ostensibly a very small fraction of the Democratic coalition, meaning descendants of black American slaves. And so politically, like, the idea that a politician doesn't want to touch this, even a Democratic one, although ostensibly as a Democrat, you should be in favor of reparations, something that I'm not stupid enough or naive enough to understand why somebody doesn't want to touch it. You think Latin people give a fuck about black American reparations? No. You think white Dems give a fuck about black American reparations? No. I would go as far to say, shit, man, my own people, Caribbean Americans, don't really give a fuck about reparations for black Americans. That's your Democratic coalition. Asian Americans, what, like, that's your coalition, right? It's just practically, it's hard for me to understand why this is an issue that could turn you against a Democratic candidate. Not the idea that it's not, like, obviously I'm for reparations for the descendants of black American slaves. Obviously, I know it's something that we could afford, as a matter of fact, as a country. It's not out of the realm of possibility that we could make this happen. And it's not impossible to figure out who descended from slaves. Like, there's records of this shit. Like, it would not be impossible to prove this shit, right? Like, it's not like it's hard, it's impossible, that it would be, oh, so expensive to pay, literally put money in the pockets of descendants of slaves. I don't even see that as a problem. And the case for it is an obvious one. But I just think, you know, when it comes to coalition building, this shit is divisive and radioactive. It's not something, like, there's certain things, like, say, tuition-free public colleges and universities, right? The idea that a Democrat wouldn't be pushing that makes no sense because their whole coalition is for it. And as a matter of fact, I'm pretty sure we could get some GOP voters to be down with that. Like, those things are obvious. Yes, them should be out there pushing this shit. There's certain issues that, like, when Democrats, you know, side with the big banks, so when Democrats do shit that go against their base coalition voters, it's like, what the fuck are you doing? Reparations for blacks, not to say that Democrats should be opposing it, but the idea that every Democratic candidate should be stumping for, I'm just like, man, y'all need to do more convincing. We need to go about convincing more people that this is a wrong that we need to be made right. I think we're on the path to that by starting the conversation, by asking people like AOC, even though, again, her answer I wasn't feeling. It was very dismissive, and she needs to get better at it. But you see Bernie, he's even moved on the subject from 2016 to now. I think it's a conversation that we need to have, and it's dope that it's happening. But the idea that I dismiss a candidate because they're not right on reparations, I don't understand that concept.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to what you're saying, and I just think, like, I would put, like, I just think there's a couple of different things that come out of this, right? I'm going to just cover myself here, and I'll joke that say, you know, by saying it's covering, but it's like, look, I am convinced by people like Doherty and Marissa Barrera-Darin. I think there should be some form of reparations. I do, because I also think it's a historical reckoning that would be good for the country. And I also think it would be, I also do think it should be part of a global process, because I actually do think things like canceling Caribbean debt needs to be part of it. So, yeah. And I'm not saying that. I want to be really clear too, because to be honest with you, like, I don't, you know, there's people like Adolf Reed, who I have a huge amount of respect for, who think that reparations are, in his words, he's like, I think they're stupid. So I'm not, and so that isn't my position, but I want to be, like, really clear that, like, I'm not, I think that this is a totally valid argument. So I happen to fall on one side of it, but it isn't like an argument where it's like, I don't think that there isn't. Like, it's not like the good people support it, and then the only people who would oppose it are, like, the worst, right? There's people who are actually, like Adolf Reed, who are, like, some of the most important intellectuals we have, and he opposes them. But I think the real part of this that frustrates me, that what you're speaking to, is kind of like, and, you know, obviously I'll get really specific, right? Because I do think, like, the bottom line is, and it doesn't mean you don't criticize him, and it doesn't mean you don't, you know, push for him to get better on certain things. But, like, for my politics and the things I care about, the idea that, like, the possibility of getting Bernie Sanders elected is a historic thing, period. Is it perfect? Is it going to solve all of our problems? I would say not only no, but when I think about electing Bernie Sanders, I mean, especially when I think about certain things like the climate, I'm thinking, like, this might be our last chance. Like, having a president who's, like, an actually genuinely committed to a lot of really essential things, not all, but a lot, is, like, not going to usher in a utopia. It's, like, maybe the last chance we have before, or, like, everything just gives out, because I don't think that, like, these problems are decades in the making. And in my view, I do think that there are fundamental problems with capitalism. So the problem that I have with how this is deployed is first of all, who gets primarily attacked over their position on reparations? Bernie Sanders, right? Whereas every other candidate does not support reparations in actuality. And in fact, I think is actually being way more disingenuous and cynical. Like, I get that Bernie inelegantly has dismissed it at times, but then he goes and says the truth, which is that his program actually would have a huge amount of racial transfer. When you have people like Julian Castro saying, like, seriously about it, it's a fucking lie. And it's such, it's so condescending. But even Kamala Harris and Elizabeth Warren, I mean, they do that two-step. You know, when you go out, they end up saying exactly what Bernie says, except they don't have as good or as ambitious a plan as Bernie. but they pretend that they'll think about it. So to me, I'm not gonna play a game where because Bernie hasn't mastered woke speech, he's gonna be held to a different standard. Fuck that. And the other thing too that is hard and difficult, and I'm not saying I think it is worth taking on at some point, but like Ta-Nehisi Coates started the thing with Bernie in 2016. And he said, you know, Bernie always talks about reimagining what's politically possible, but then he won't support reparations. Okay, and you know what? Fair enough. That's a valid critique. However, Hillary Clinton, as I always used to say in 2016, like, I didn't realize there was a Marcus Garvey section of Hillary Clinton's website. Okay. And the second part is, and this is where I'm just like, I want to just like put it on a level. Like, Bernie also is a politician. And when he's talking about things that are politically impossible, but we need to expand our boundaries of what's possible, he's mostly talking about positions that a vast majority of people would get behind, like every single human being in this country having full health care, free college for all, taking back power from the corporations that are cannibalizing this country, that you can get those people to, you know, a broad population to fight the corporate interests on those issues. That is different than, say, taking you. Yeah, what's up?
My thing is the reason why the Bernie conversation.
Real quick, let me just finish this real quick. I'll throw it right back to you. But that, I'm just saying that is fundamentally different than taking an issue that 30% or 20% or 15% or 10% of people support, and then saying we're going to wage on that. It's a different thing. I'm not saying sometimes you have to do that, but you have to recognize a basic political difference. And the final thing I just want to say real quick, like, you know, I don't know, man, like, Bernie's the one who's putting gentrification on the table. Bernie's the one who's like more clear about racism and policing and using the phrase prison industrial complex and all of these broader sets. So like I support reparations as a policy, but the way it's been deployed is cynical and dishonest, and I'm not going to play that game.
Yeah, my problem with the AOC comment that
I don't honestly know.
She basically was like, clean air is reparations. That's like, essentially, you know what I'm saying? Like, essentially, like, you know, right now she's kind of a one issue politician, and it's about like climate change, and it's about like, you know, getting new jobs into the economy and you know, lowering our fossil fuel output and all of that shit. Like, we get it. I just think the problem with this, like, she was dismissive of the notion of reparations.
Well, cool. You shouldn't do that.
No. But my problem with dismissing somebody for that act is that you're dismissing the only serious people in American politics who you can even have the conversation with, right? Like, that's the problem. It's like, Bernie's the only person who will have that conversation with you. You think Joe Biden would have that conversation with you?
Well, no, but here's what I'm saying, though, is that what's really starting to get me, though, is that Joe Biden might dishonestly, right? Like,
exactly.
What might happen is that one of his advisors will say, hey, Joe, here's a good way to fuck Bernie and pretend you're more left.
Yes.
You support reparations. And then he'll say that, and then you'll say, oh shit, you support a plan like Doherty's plan to actually create a program to, you know, to as a restitution for the crimes of slavery and redlining and so on. And then Biden will say some shit like, well, you know, my housing plan, and I think, you know, and then it's like, oh, so you mean the same shit like that someone that all the other candidates say, except in fact in Bernie's case, actually, and just because of how racist this country is, his plan would be the biggest racial transfer of wealth in American history, just because of disproportionate effects of things like poverty. So it's just, it's so
bullshit. And again, Mike, I understand, even the coach shit, I understand, is because guess what? Again, Bernie's the only person talking about wealth redistribution, right? Like, right. He's speaking about it in frank terms. And yes, reparations is a redistribution of American wealth, not you know, some individual want the wealth of the country, our country, right? It's right. A redistribution of that wealth, a reallocation of our money, our funds, our resources to a certain amount of people, which, by the way, we always already do. See the fucking Trump tax cuts. Like, right. We already do that. That, like, a tax cut is a redistribution of wealth to only a select few people. We know what the fuck that is. Like, we already do that. Bernie's the only person speaking in these terms. Straight up, like, no, we're sucking fucking wealth from the top people and spreading it back out amongst the rank and file members of American society. So that's why it just seems counterproductive that it's like, oh, fuck Bernie. He don't want to do reparations. Like, yo, he's the only person having the conversation. You don't even have another vessel. Show it to me. Show me another serious vessel through which you can have this conversation. There ain't none.
There isn't. And the thing that again, it's that dynamic where you hit like – And then sometimes, look, sometimes it's obviously the right move to go to the person that's closest to you and push them. But like when it's tangible, like even like on another tip, like this question of like Bernie got in trouble because he said he didn't support open borders. Right now, in my utopian worldview, I support open borders, but that's like a decades long political project. Right.
Mike, so, that's another issue, by the way. That's another issue. Immigration is another issue that rank and file Democrats don't support. That shit does not have broad appeal. The concept of opening the American borders does not have broad appeal amongst the Democratic coalition. Period. Right. The people that you fuck with don't support it.
What you need to do is say, look, even if it has appeal or not, you need to abolish ICE. You need to demilitarize the border. You need there are actual serious things that you need to make clear that that's the position. But what ends up happening is it's like if you're on Twitter and there was a new New York Times report that came out about just like, you know, just basically like, you know, here's what people on Twitter who are like Twitter influencers think in the Democratic Party. And here's what normal Democrats think. And it's everything you're talking about.
Right.
And it's like you – it's like Bernie's running to be president of the United States. He's not running to be head of a DSA study group. He's not running to get a woke ratio on Twitter.
Yep.
So now on the other hand, of course, we want – we do want things like reparations and open borders to enlarge the possibility of our politics, but I'm not going to use those things to prove my bona fides and undermine by far the best candidate. Sorry.
Again, by far the most progressive candidate.
Yeah, I'm not playing that game.
That's why it's like
what
when
are you playing the hands of, what are you ultimately doing? Like
it's
even
just,
time.
It's just silly to me. It's just silly to me, the idea as a progressive that you will have a progressive dismissal of the most progressive of person available, right? Again, it took Bernie running and losing in 2016 to even get where the fuck he's at right now, but he did it. He did it. He did go out and animate the imaginations of X amount of people. He did raise a bunch of money. He did it. He's a progressive politician who actually did it. And again, it's not to say that we shouldn't have the conversation, but the idea that we're going to denigrate, dismiss people, the AOCs and the Bernies who won people on progressivism, right? Like these are the people that we can have the conversations with. You ain't having this convo with Kamala Harris. You ain't having this conversation with the Asian homie. The universal basic income homie.
Oh, I do not like that particular Asian homie, but that's another conversation.
You're not having this.
You're not having the conversation about anything to do with power in the large sense and taking it back for people, including in the racial,
genuine, actual racial ways.
I think that's exactly it. So the question becomes like, look, on the positive end, if you're in media, if you have a platform, of course, the job, you know, is to keep pushing ideas and strategies and visions so we can get, you know, at least in my opinion, you know, to that more and more, you know, radical world in a lot of areas. But on the other hand, if you're coming out in a certain way that undermines the best candidate, like, I see certain people, the way they're operating in relation to Bernie. And it's so funny because the whole brand is like, oh, I'm so radical. But the actual practical effect is that, ironically, they might be being a great capitalist because it's good for their brand, but they're actually undermining a really unique chance. And I just think it's bullshit. I'm, and that's like my opinion across, like, even areas I know a lot more about. Like, of course, I oppose U.S. intervention in Venezuela. There's been a few things with Bernie that I thought needed to be like, oh, actually, we need to say we disagree. But on the other hand, it's like, you actually have the Democratic front runner opposing a coup there. And I see people looking at it like, oh, I can't believe Bernie said that, you know, the 2017 election was blah, 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 blah. And it's like, he's running for president of the United States. He's not a Twitter buddy. He is not, like, he's not part of your fucking subculture. If anything, what he's doing is providing an unparalleled opportunity to make things like, we shouldn't have coups in other countries, we need to dismantle the prison industrial complex and give everybody healthcare and college, you know, more palpable than at any other time. And the thing is, like, yeah, Bernie's always going to fall up short against the person imagining, you know.
He's running for president. He has to. He has to. This is America, bro. This isn't some fucking hippie commune, bro. Like, and that's the thing, like, and that's not to go against a hippie commune. It's just like, bro, coalition building. That shit don't happen how it does on Twitter. I'm sorry. We got to bring people together for common causes, bro. The cost of tuition, the cost of healthcare. Yes, rank and file Democratic voters all can get behind that shit. And again, the shit polls well on the other side, right? Like, we gotta take these steps. And again, and you say to yourself, well, shit, why don't we already have it? Because a select few of very influential people have made it so that, you know, these issues don't get a light of day, but now they are. And now we're talking about it every fucking day. We talking about Medicare for All every single day on the news. Every candidate got to answer the question. And then guess what they got to do? They got to explain exactly what it means. You know all the bullshit that happens at your doctor? This is what we want to do with it. Every single day. And then, yo, and you've even seen it, right? Even with something like Obamacare. Like, the Republicans have realized they can't run on fucking it up. They lost elections behind taking this shit away. And it used to be their number one thing, right? But guess what? And even if you want to say Barry's Obamacare shit was too feckless and all of that shit, which may be true, and fuck Joe Lieberman forever, which may be true, right? But guess what? The other side don't ever want to get rid of it. The people who would oppose us are just like, we can't. Well, we're losing on that. That's a win. Well, I'm sorry.
That's another thing about understanding how politics works, right? Like, look, as a matter of policy, 100%. And also, by the way, as a matter of personal experience, I'll be honest about that. I don't like Obamacare at all. For many years, it still did not cover me. And now that I can, I'm, you know, way overpaying for a shitty product, right? Like, private health insurance sucks. Right. But the bottom line is, on a political level, even that plan introduced in the idea of tens of millions of more people's heads, the reality that they get to have health care just for being a person.
Or that the system that we currently had, the status quo, sucked.
And the status quo was criminally unacceptable. As soon as you make people reset their expectations, that goes in the right direction. So the answer to Obamacare was like, yeah, of course it's not good enough. Of course it needs, like, okay, in fact, you need, in my opinion, you just need 100% of policy.
But you know what, Mike?
That people's expectations, which brings you in the right direction to do that.
Right.
Like, claim a fucking W. Claim a fucking W.
Listen, and that's the bottom line. The bottom line is, we can't go back. We can't go back to insurance companies fucking you over because of pre-existing conditions. We introduced it. It's over. That can't ever be the case again. People realize, like, wow, that shit was fucked up. I can't believe they had that shit.
right? Like the parts of the fucking program that people love, well, we're never going back. Even if you want to call it Obamacare, even the people who hate him the most recognize like the shit that they was doing before was bullshit. And by the way, the way we get to that point is not by letting the other side win all the time. I'm sorry.
Right.
We got to fucking win.
What's wild to me is, yeah, I mean, and this is where I get pissed off at like everybody basically besides you and like, you know, the people that I keep around with, right? Because you have people that I am, you know, like I am a fucking socialist, right? And so I have that contingent, but that's the type of contingent that's like, oh, like Bernie, you know, he hasn't said on the first day he's in office that he's gonna like, you know, oh, I don't know, like nationalize Ford Motor Company and like, God, you know, repaint the streets or whatever the like, you know, like and say that like, you know, and do a lecture on like the white patriarchy or whatever the fuck. And then but then on the other hand, you know, you have, you know, these centrists that actually do not have the actual commitments to justice and to equity, but they will use that rhetoric. I mean, that again, that just looping back to reparations, what I find so amazing about it. And, you know, Cornel West, of course, was the one who, like, got this perfectly. He's like, look, like, we're old men. We don't know all the buzzwords. Maybe even they don't even have the right policy at times. But just the way you could actually be in a position where, you know, just nothing of a human being whose record at HUD actually, like, I don't think we'll ever really talk about it because he'll never go anywhere as a candidate because he really sucks and he's just terrible and the worst. But, like,
right.
Julian Castro increased – not only poverty generally, but absolutely disproportionate poverty of people in color when he was head of HUD. In fact, when he was on Hillary's shortlist, a lot of progressive groups are actually organizing like, cannot be him. Like, he's horrible. Right. And people who don't look at the structure and the strategy and the bigger picture, you know, they'll be on Twitter, you know, sniping about Bernie misphrasing something and then giving ammunition to, you know, to the Buttigiegs, to the Harrises, to the and all of these other candidates who not for it. Look, if you think that they have the same commitment to dealing with gentrification or healthcare or labor as Bernie, then, you know, I would like to sell you a multi-level marketing scheme. Like,
yeah, and, man, shouts to Tummy T. here's another thing that I'll say why I think another part of it that I think is important that people don't realize is that if or when Bernie wins the nomination and eventually is able to defeat Donald Trump, the next time around, instead of Barry copycats like a Beto, like a Cory Booker, or even a Kamala Harris, we're going to have Bernie copycats.
Right.
Okay. Like, that's staying here.
Look at what you are, and it's not just because of Bernie. But Bernie helped pave the way. And now who do we look at when we look at Congress? We look at, of course, AOC, but also Ilhan Omar.
Yeah.
Katie Porter is less flashy, but she's doing incredible work on the Finance Committee. Iona Presley, Rashida Tlaib. Like, that comes from a new
political
environment.
Even if you get my second choice is still Warren. Give me some Warren copycats, bro. Give me some people that's following and heard me.
Katie Porter studied under Warren. I mean, yes, exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the other part that people aren't getting. It's about moving the ship, man. And again, this shit is a big ass ship. It's not a fucking speedboat. Okay? You get, like, these pivots don't happen on a dime. It has to happen gradually and slowly, bro. That's just what it is, okay? Just from our last crop. Just think of Martin O'Malley. That motherfucker would get laughed off the stage. I'm sorry, bro. He will get laughed off the stage.
I think he kind of was.
he was, but what I'm saying is, like, that's what we were dealing with back in 2015, 2016. Right. And look at where we've come. Look at where we've come. So, you know, I think that's another reason why it's important, because if Bernie does become the standard bearer for the party and we shift from Obama era, which again, I'm a lot more bullish on Barry than most people are, most progressives are. But, you know, the bottom line is Cory Booker just ain't good enough for me. Okay? Kamala Harris, she's not good enough. I'm sorry. Like, I like these people.
Well, look, I mean, look, whatever else you say about Obama, and I have, I mean, my thing is, I like Obama a lot as a man and as a leader, and I think his politics were mostly really bad, right? But here's one thing. It's like, Obama spent his career in civil rights law, community organizing, academia, and local politics, not putting people in jail for nonviolent crimes, Kamala Harris, or trying to privatize the Newark schools for hedge funds and, you know, voting with pharmaceuticals and AIPAC all the time, Booker. And neither of them have a fraction, and none of them, I mean, watching Beto O'Rourke try to act like Barack Obama is embarrassing. It's like, yeah. Dude, you're not that.
And again, if Bernie becomes the standard bearer of the Democratic Party, the standard bearer is somebody who's straight up, his first priority in life is working people. That's it. That's what we need. It. That's where we need to go. That's what needs it. To happen. It's not That's about it. Romanticizing Bernie as a saint or some idol or no. He's the most progressive candidate of my fucking life, bro. I'm sorry. That matters. That matters a little bit. That matters a little bit more than the idea he's not perfect or great on reparations, you know. That's where I'm at. I don't have anything more to add. Do you have anything, Mike?
No, I think that's good, and I think I think that we need to, you know, I like that idea of injecting a little bit more strategy and things for sure. As always, Wise, this is amazing. We're gonna bank one next week, and then soon we'll be sitting. Fucking sipping fresh squeezed juice in breeze of Los Angeles
I'm
together.
I'm telling you, man, the sun out here hits your skin different, Mike. I'm telling you, man.
I'm ready.
I look forward to seeing you next weekend, man.
That Saturday night, that dude. Because we were just mapping out the show actually right before we recorded this. I was sitting with David and Matt. We were doing like a show outline. Get your tickets, Bootleg Theater, April 20th. It's going to be crazy good. And, of course, all the ways you can find me, patreon.com/TMBS, Michael Brooks Show on YouTube, Michael Brooks Show on iTunes, and also, you know, Majority Report. And subscribe if you haven't yet. I don't know why you wouldn't, but subscribe. Make sure you don't miss anything from this feed. Get your tickets to the Chicago live show. I'm jealous about that. I wish I was going to that Count the Dings live show. I'm ready for another Count the Dings live show, as a matter of fact. Tell them again about all the Athletic and all the ways they can tap into.
Yeah, man. Just make sure you subscribe to theathletic.com/ding. Get 40 dings. Get 40% off, you know, for your first year. Comes out to $3 a month. Very affordable, man. And the content is incredible. It's not just our content. Our colleagues are some of the best and brightest in the entire industry. And that goes for every single sport. So, you know, I just want everybody to go out, subscribe to that. One last thing, man. They laid Nipsey Hussle to rest yesterday. He had his service at Staples Center. The place was jam-packed. They did a procession through South Central all the way up to downtown, all through L.A., man. The outpouring of love was overwhelming. It's kind of, man, it's been overwhelming to see the amount of love and appreciation that the guy has received in these last few days. So, you know, I just wanted to say thoughts go out to his family, the people who are closest to him, his children and stuff, man. It's been kind of crazy, very heavy in the city for the last 2 weeks, obviously, with this guy being slain. But I just wanted to send thoughts out to the people who are closest to Nipsey Hussle and, you know, all of his fans, everybody who gave a fuck about Nipsey Hussle, man. You know, our thoughts are with you guys.
Definitely. Absolutely. I think if you haven't yet, for any reason, please listen to the conversation we had with Trey last week, because I think we honored him and got to the context. And so, rest in peace. And of course, all appreciation to him and everybody involved. All right, we'll be back next week. Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Jade. Thanks, everybody. See you soon.
All right.
Later, bro.
Later.